Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Cigna Alcohol Awareness Series Conference. Today's program is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks, I'd like to turn things over to Ms. Amy Papageorge. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for Cigna's Drug and Alcohol Awareness Series. My name is Amy Papageorge, and I'm a therapist and care manager for the outpatient alcohol team at Cigna. Due to the format of this seminar, you will not be able to ask questions during the talk, but there will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end. Following today's presentation, you will be asked to participate in a brief five-question survey so that we can get your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After the survey, you will be able to ask our speaker questions regarding his talk. Please limit your questions to the seminar topic. If you have specific questions regarding substance abuse treatment or your policy, please contact the outpatient team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. There is a PowerPoint for today's seminar available online. To access the PowerPoint, go to www.cigna.com/substanceabuse and click on today's presentation. Again, that's www.cigna.com/substanceabuse and then click on today's presentation. Today I have the pleasure of introducing Juan Harris. Juan is the Clinical Director for Older Adult Services at the Karen Hanley Center in Florida. Juan has a master's degree in counseling psychology and has been an addictions counselor and active member of the addiction treatment field since 2000. Juan?
Thank you, Amy, for that nice introduction. Thanks, everyone, for joining. And today I am going to talk about the hidden epidemic of addiction disorders in older adults and boomers. I'd like to begin by looking at our objectives for today. In this talk, we will review the complex New Age profiles of patients 66 and older as it relates to alcohol and chemical addiction. Also, we will explore life stages and effect and risk factors and protective factors as it related to what are the best therapies to engage these older adults individuals in treatment. And then we'll discuss the differences and similarities in the treatment approaches for older adults and baby boomers. I'd like to begin by sharing a story. I am 67 years old and went into treatment when my grandson was only 5 months old. My first anniversary of sobriety was last month. I now attend meetings 5 times a week, have a sponsor, and on my 12th step of my 12-step program. When I realized my one-year anniversary was coming up, I told my children, let's get together. I want a big to-do for my first anniversary. And that is exactly what it was. I had my family back, but not before embarking on a long, hard journey towards sobriety. It's important to remember when we talk about the illness of alcoholism and addiction, that the patient is the family and the family is the patient. When one person in that family system is suffering, the whole family suffers. And we'll continue to follow this story throughout this presentation at different intervals. Aging is changing. In the year 1900, if a person lived to be 50 years old, that was considered to be very aged at that time. Now, in the year 2010, people are living well into their 80s and 90s, and I'm not just talking about living, I'm talking about quality of life. To have a good quality of life well into their 80s. Some of the reasons for that is the medical advances that we've seen in some pharmacology. But as a whole, this nation has been concerned with wellness overall for about 20, 25 years now, where we saw gym memberships increase and people eating better and eating healthily, and that's translated into a longer life expectancy. Well, let's take a closer look at that, and let's look at older adults and some of the symptoms that go along with living older. It's important to understand that prescription drug use is really on the increase with older adults. I've been the director of the older adult program here at Karen Hanley for more than 10 years, 5 years ago, when patients, older adult patients, came into treatment, 5 years ago, they had 85% had one substance, alcohol, 13% were alcohol and prescriptions, and about 2% were illicit drug use. Now I can tell you that 90% of older adults use prescription and over-the-counter medications that interact adversely with alcohol or illicit drugs. Now, why this is really important in that you have to understand that some drugs, when used together, can have an additive effect where 1 plus 1 equals 2. Some drugs, when used in combination, drugs will have an effect of blocking a receptor, or another drug would have an antagonistic effect. We call that in the business where a person wouldn't feel that drug. That's an agonist. Other drugs, like alcohol and sleep medications, more commonly known as benzodiazepines, which older adults get them most times prescribed for sleep, 1 plus 1 with that drug interaction can actually equal 5. So when used in combination, it increases the potentiality. That's why this is a really important bullet on this slide. And at least 25% of older adults use some type of psychoactive medication with abuse potential. And we'll take a closer look at that as we move through this presentation. So what are some of the reasons and the risks involved with substance abuse for older patients? Well, emotional and social problems. One of the things that we find a big core issue for people as they age is loneliness and social isolation. Many times, as people age and they retire from their work, they lose purpose in life. And so as part of that, especially for older adult men, a lot of times for men, they are what they do. And when they don't do what they do anymore, it's like checking a big part of their life's identity at the door. Here we talk about bereavement. A bereavement is healthy, but when we talk about malignant grief, wherein grief can be associated with more than just death, when one or the other in a relationship loses health, that's a grief issue. Sometimes adult children will want their mother or their father to move closer to where they live geographically, to be closer to them or closer to the grandkids. And what happens with these older patients is that they leave their support networks behind and they come in and it's difficult for them to form new social bonds. Also, we need to look at medical problems. When we opened the Center for Older Adult Recovery in August 16, 1998, by design, we built and attached it to our skilled nursing unit. So one thing that's important to look at when treating older patients is that they are going to have coexisting medical issues that needed to be treated concurrently when you're treating them for alcoholism, prescription drugs, or illicit drug use. So it's important to choose a facility that can manage their medical needs, because you're going to see that with an aging population. Continuing our story, one day as I was driving to my daughter's house, she saw me drinking behind the wheel. She asked me, why was I drinking in the middle of the day and didn't understand that I am an alcoholic and it is a disease? I wanted to be a good grandmother and to do all the things right. And at that time, I felt so uncontrollably excited and anxious that I didn't think I could be a good grandmother without drinking to calm my nerves. Not uncommon at all. I once had a lady in treatment, and her coexisting medical issue, when we were detoxing her, and she was one of the symptoms of a detoxification is for a person to have what's called hand tremors or shakiness. And so when we were sure that we had her medically detoxed, because all of her other detox symptoms had abated, she still was sort of tremulous. And what we found out Medically, she had what we called essential tremors. And what we found out in her history, part of her treatment, she would take a drink before she went grocery shopping or to the bank or out to pay bills, because that was the way that she could calm herself down to feel comfortable enough to be in front of people, and those are attention tremors. So I certainly, when we look at this lady here, says she took a drink to calm her nerves. I just gave an example of a person that was in treatment with the same issue. Continuing, older adults. Only 7% of older adults in SA is substance abuse. 7% of substance abuse treatment facilities have a program designed specifically for seniors. Why is this so important? We're going to talk about baby boomers and their impact on America as a whole, something that I call the silver tsunami. And not to get ahead of our slides a little bit, what the silver tsunami is that 10,000 Americans each day are turning 65 years old. And that trend will continue for the next 19 years. That is the silver tsunami. Every 7 seconds, someone turns 50 years old. Older adults with a substance use disorder respond well to age-specific, supportive, and non-confrontational group treatment. So what that is saying, people that are older, they do well in an environment of peers their own age because the treatment issues are the same. We talked about grief and loss, but also understanding of the illness. If we're talking about a person, for example, that's 70 years old and they come into treatment for alcoholism, this is a person that's raised by a parent that's one generation removed from a time when we thought that selling alcohol was so bad in this country that we prohibited the sale of it, and that's what we're talking about, that was prohibition. So a person that's raised with that sort of indoctrination, if they come into treatment for alcoholism, they will view themselves, well, to drink alcohol was illegal, and I'm an alcoholic, so I must be a bad person. They will tend to see themselves as a bad person trying to become good rather than a sick person trying to get well. And what happens for a person with that type of indoctrination, they'll come in treatment a lot of feeling stigmatized to identify themselves as an alcoholic, and they'll be really ingrained with guilt and shame about having an illness. So one of the big parts of treatment and working with this population is to help them realize that they're not bad people. They're just a person with an illness, and we separate the person from the illness. Supportive and non-confrontational group treatment. With older adult patients, it's very, very important in the therapeutic process to establish rapport and respect their sensitivity. Confrontational treatment does not work for this population. Carl Rogers, who is a therapist who advanced the theory of, it's called Rogerian therapy. When what Rogerian therapy talks about is the therapeutic relationship in and of itself is the most important tool to the therapeutic process. With older adult patients, this is the most important thing, is making that connection, establishing the relationship. And, you know, when we think about it, whether it's our friends, our family, our neighbors, our cashier in our local grocery store, even our pets, people know when you love them and they know when you don't. And when people know and believe that you genuinely care about them as a person, you can be effective with them. Really, really key in working with the older population. Looking at a little bit of boomer statistics, boomers have a higher rate of illicit drug use, and the size of boomers are larger than any other cohort. Now, we define boomers as born between 1946 and 1964. I am a baby boomer myself, and I can remember the mantra for that era was drugs, sex, and rock and roll. So So boomers' attitudes about illicit drug use is much different than older adults' attitudes. And actually, older adults, more than any age group, and we talk older adult, we're talking 65 and over, older adults have a better success rate than any group. And the reasons for that is because they espouse all of the values that we hold so important in this country. They're honest, they're hardworking, they're responsible, they have integrity, but most of all, they respect authority. So in development of a plan of care for their treatment, if we make them make it a collaboration where we make them the author of rather than the object of their care plan, they will do it. They will do it. Boomers, on the other hand, challenge authority. They ask the question why. And so a boomer patients can be somewhat challenging. They're open to scientific views. They're the ones that really introduced what therapy became in vogue in that boomer population. Boomers will tell you twice a week how much they're paying for treatment. They will hold counselors responsible. They will not be satisfied with a counselor that continues to show up to group late and seemingly unorganized and shuffling papers. They have a high expectation and accountability, do baby boomers. As we continue to look at the impact over the next 50 years, in 1995 we can see almost 150,000 boomers, older adults, were in treatment. That number increased to almost 1 million in 2020. And what we have to remember as we look at these statistics here, that for people that actually meet the diagnostic criteria that would indicate that they need a treatment, more than 90% of those people will deny that they even need treatment. So these are just numbers from people that are in treatment, but it just touches the tip of the iceberg of the number of people that actually need treatment. As we look down these slides here, we can see illicit drug use or alcohol abuse, how it decreased from 1.7 million to 4.4 by 2020. Moving to the next slide, general population. Age 50 or older is expected to be 39% of our population by 2020. What this is saying is that our country is aging, and any social service, any service that provides any kind of care to older individuals is going to see a large impact of this aging population on the services that they provide. So it would behoove all of us as professionals are interested in this population to really, really learn how to work with an aging population. We'll talk more about that. Again, age 50 and older with substance use disorder, it was 2.8 million in 2006, and that's almost doubled. That'll be doubled in 2020 to 5.7 million. What's the best ways to work with this population? Effective treatments for older adults. Again, we talked about supported non-confrontational environment. I can remember early on as a counselor, I had a lady that came into treatment, and the only thing that she would talk to me about for her first 2 weeks was her dog. If I tried to talk about alcoholism, she, no, no, no. If I tried to talk about step one, no, no, no. But if I wanted to talk about Fluffy, then she was okay. Well, guess what? For the first 2 weeks when she came in my office, all we talked about was Fluffy. And that was her dog. Well, she began to trust me because I was willing to be supportive and non-confrontational and didn't push her. And she's sober today, and that story is part of her story. You know, so it's important. Research tells us the two most important things, predictors and positive outcomes for patients, is the relationship with the therapist and availability of a support system post-discharge. huge. You could never underestimate the value of the relationship with the therapy. When we talk about cognitive behavioral approaches, it's important to match the therapy with what's going on with the patient. So if the patient's problems have their origins in behavior, you want to use more of a cognitive approach, a behavioral approach. If the problems that the patients are having has this origins and thinking errors, then a cognitive approach is better. But for non-clinicians that might be listening to this, you want to match the approach that meets the presentation that the patients have. And a pace is important. You know, older adults should not be placed into treatment with younger individuals where there's a really, really intense pace. They won't keep up, and it sort of passes them by in terms of what's expected they would get out of that program. Treatment should be definitely tailored to meet their special needs, both medically and psychosocially. Some of that might involve, when we talk psychosocially, is what is the living environment? Part of deciding when it's time for a patient to leave treatment, we need to know what is the living environment at home. Switching aside here, slide, the living environment, will the patient be returning to an environment where there's alcohol in the home? Does the spouse drink? What's the spouse's attitude, a family member's attitude about this person's problem? So having a healthy environment to return home is very, very important. And when we talk about that as part of ASAM placement, in Dimension 6, is the home environment conducive for recovery? Let's take a closer look now at boomers and some of the statistics on boomers. Half of all boomers have tried illicit drugs. That's 4.3 million using an illicit drug in their prior year. I am one of the country's leading experts in treating older adults and boomers, and I've been directing this program for more than 10 years. Now, what I talked about 5 years ago, 85% of my patients were alcohol, one substance, 13% were prescriptions, and 2% illicit. As I talk to you today, only 60% of these older adult patients that come in are using just alcohol. That other gap of 35% includes prescriptions and alcohol. So we can see prescriptions has really become an epidemic with these older adult patients, and 5% of these patients now are using illicit drugs. Now, being one of the country's leading experts, what I thought I was seeing with illicit drug use on the increase with this population, I thought what I was seeing was baby boomers or patients who had started using illicit drugs earlier in life and had continued to use illicit drugs through life and had just aged into the group and aged into that population. Boy, was I wrong. What the research tells us, this new illicit first-time drug use in the older adult population is increasing. And the number one drug of increase is cocaine, followed by marijuana. And I'm talking about illicit. When I say illicit, I'm not talking about medicinal marijuana and that sort of thing. I'm talking about these drugs are coming off the streets, okay? Drug use between the ages of 50 and 59 is nearly double that of previous generations. And it's really an epidemic. A significant percentage of middle-aged adults are binge drinking, which means 5 to 7 drinks in one sitting. I've talked to you about this slide. Every day, more than 10,000 baby boomers are turning 65, and that trend will continue for the next 19 years, and every 7 seconds, someone turns 50 years old. Boomer patients often started drinking and are using when they were in college or in the service, and they never really stopped. What this is talking about is what we would call early onset alcoholism and addiction. Okay, and I'll talk more about early onset versus late onset in this presentation. Okay. Well, what are some of the barriers to recovery for boomers? One of the biggest barriers is the concept that, you know, drugs may not be so bad. Remember, the mantra for that era was drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Tune in, turn on, and drop out. And as a person that grew up in the late 60s and early 70s, if a person did not use, there was so much peer pressure to use marijuana or some other psychoactive drug, that if you didn't use, you were considered such an outcast, maybe even thought of as possibly being a narc, which was a term used for an undercover agent. And so people just used to fit in. And we've already talked here about the reaction to authority. Boomers come into treatment, and we talk about a cohort effect for baby boomers at a time when they were born. There were so many movements that were going on in the country. We had the civil rights movement. We had the women's movement. We had the war, you know, pro-war, against the war, pro-life, and all of these different movements. And these soldiers that returned, a lot of the drug use started in the military, and these soldiers that returned from Vietnam, they were not welcomed back and honored the way our soldiers are today. These soldiers often were taunted and called baby killers. And there was no recognition of trauma from the military. Today we recognize it as PTSD and as treatment for it. In those days, it was looked at as something called shell-shocked. And these gentlemen were ostracized. Well, these are the same people that are using illicit drugs today. Some of the dual diagnosis things that we see with this population as well, we see a lot of anxiety, depression, and bipolar conditions. Prescription drugs are hugely on board. And the number one prescription drugs that older adults and boomers are taking is benzodiazepines. That includes a group such as Valium, Ambien, Ativan, Clonopin, Xanax, and that group. And for a mental health disorder, it's usually prescribed for general anxiety disorder as a mental health drug. Most older adults or boomers get them for sleep complaints. And the interesting thing about the older population, they don't get mental health drugs from psychiatrists. 75% of them get them from their primary care physicians. And to help understand that, that would be similar to me having a heart condition and going to my primary care physician to be treated for my heart condition rather than going to a heart doctor or going to an oncologist for a cancer condition. And so this happens over and over. Well, one of the problems with benzodiazepines, especially when we talk about the advances of pharmacology, I don't want to say necessarily it's a problem, but as people age, it can become a problem, is that as people age, their sensitivity to medications and alcohol increases. And with the advances in the medications, we have what we can call now extended release or time release medications, which means we don't have to take two pills six times a day in order to get the optimal effect. It's time released. Well, in the business, we call that having a longer half-life. When you combine that with the physiological changes that are happening in people's body as they age, it really can have a prolonged effect, and we'll look at that as we go through the presentation. Passing through the fondest wish lab of the 60th anniversary, let's look at some of the myths of aging. Just a couple of these I'd like to point out. One of the myths about aging is that all people are senile or demented as they age, not true at all. Another myth is that older people cannot work as effectively as younger people. That's not true. I recently saw research about the value of multitasking, and what that research came back with, multitasking, people that call themselves multitaskers, it's like working a computer and having all of these windows open, but they do not actually complete more tasks than older adults. So it's multitasking is very overrated. And we look at other myths about aging here on this slide. So what is old? Well, old is a matter of functioning. It is not a chronological number. So how a person functions really determines their age. So it's important when you're screening with an older adult patient, sometimes the screen may specifically focus on alcohol or prescriptions, but we need to be aware of the illicit drug use in this population because it's very much an increasing trend. We have more statistics here. I want to bring your attention down to the last bullet on this slide. We've done a lot of statistics. I just wanted you guys to have access to this. Is that cocaine? Seniors are now abusing more illicit substances such as cocaine, heroin, and marijuana, and legal prescription drugs than before. And what we're talking about in this slide is new first-time illicit drug use in this population. Very important to know that. These are not boomers that have aged into the group. We see where the prescription drug use on that next slide has increased. Another dynamic that we're seeing with older patients in that there used to be a time where the grandchildren would raid grandma or granddad's medicine cabinet for unused pain medication. Well, older adults now are becoming more and more aware of the value of those medications that they're not using. And I actually have had, in the last year, 7 or 8 of my patients who got their medications, who got part of their prescriptions from their neighbors, they were buying them from their neighbors who would get them filled and sell them to them. So some of these older patients, I'd hate to use the word, are dealing, but they certainly are finding value in selling their unused prescriptions to their neighbors and getting income for that. So we can put whatever label we'd like to put on it, but that's happening. So we're at signs and symptoms. What are some of the signs and symptoms? And looking at the page of signs and symptoms of alcoholism and addiction, and I want to bring your attention to memory loss on these bullets here. And the reason I want to focus on that, because so quickly, with an aging population, if a person starts having a little bit of memory loss, they're quickly given a diagnosis of dementia. Well, I talked earlier about benzodiazepines as being the prescription that are prescribed to this population more than any other prescription. The average older adult gets 17 prescriptions a year prescribed by 4.5 doctors. Now, those benzodiazepines with that longer half-life that I described, in combination with the physiological changes in the body, the water content in the body, as a person ages, they have less muscle and more fat. Well, muscle has more water than fat. So as the water content in the body decreases, the effects of the medication increases. Liver and kidney metabolism changes as well. And so the person's body's not getting rid of toxins. Albumin, protein in blood, decreases. That's the protein in blood that the active ingredient in medications and alcohol attaches to, that decreases. So what happens when you have long-acting benzodiazepines connecting with the body that's having decreased tolerance, as I'm describing, they produce symptoms like daytime sedation. It affects concentration. It affects attention. It affects memory. And these are all signs and symptoms to the untrained person of dementia. And that's the diagnosis that's given quickly because it's an older person. And what happens when this person goes to the doctor, they usually have adult children with them, and that will be the one that's given the symptoms to the doctor. And as it seems from each care provider from that point forward that the older patient goes to see, people start treating the chart instead of treating the person. And I get calls. Usually what will happen if we look at this bullet here, you'll get a fall. A fall will happen from that synergistic effect of a medication and alcohol. And as the family members are talking to someone like me or my staff, and this is, well, having falls, you know, we want them to stop drinking. And then they say, yeah, by the way, yeah, we've been noticing the memory problems. We think there's some dementia. Well, here's a really, really important takeaway from this presentation if you don't get anything else. If the person's memory loss is secondary to alcoholism or prescription drug use, if we take them off of alcohol and prescription drugs and it hadn't gotten to the point of what we call organicity, which means permanent, it will improve. It will reverse itself. And that's part of the determinant on how long people should be in treatment. And so that's the first rule out in our in the DSM is, can this condition, can this memory loss be better accounted for as secondary to a substance or a medication or secondary to a general medical condition? In patients that are in need of alcohol or prescription drug treatment, you have to get the booze out of them. You have to get the pills out of them and keep it out of them for a longer time. You can do some testing, like a 7-minute neuro in the beginning, a full neuropsych battery, and it will tell us, you know, exactly whether or not we have dementia here or we have memory loss secondary to use of a substance. How do you raise the issue? It's important when we talk to older adults about their issues that we connect their drinking or their problems with something else physically going on in your body. I put a couple of examples here. Describe what you see. For example, I've noticed you've been having difficulty walking. And as far as I can tell, you've eaten only biscuits this week. Is there a problem with your meals? If we approach it directly and start talking about drinking or perceived drug use, most times it will strengthen the person's resistance to talking about the subject. So please use these tips that I'm giving you here on this slide, raising the issue. Petitioner barriers to recovery, the one I want to talk about is ageism. What ageism is, it's the assumption that whatever problem that the older adult is having is part of the aging process. And when people are guilty of ageism, a lot of times it's family members or treatment providers, it really stops or limits their ability to look for other causes of what really is the source of the problem with the older person, and that's called ageism. Also, there's a failure to recognize symptoms that and lack of knowledge and screening. And people are doing a lot of surfing on the Internet and coming to the doctor's office and bringing their own diagnosis. And they're asking for it. They come in, they know how to describe the symptoms that will get a medication that they want. And older adults doctor shop as well, son. I put a few slides in here of adverse drug events. These are, and the gist of these slides, you can see adverse drug events increase with the number of medications. If we move down that middle slide, when taking 5 medications, the percentage frequency is 38%, taking 7 or more medication, it moves up to 82%. And again, on that next slide, we talk about misuse versus misuse by a patient versus misuse by a practitioner. The misuse by a patient is the dose level more than prescribed and prescription for inappropriate indication. Sometimes patients get prescriptions for side effects of other medications, and that's something that we would call contraindicated. Here, as we move to accidental addicts, I've talked about age-related changes in the body. This is a slide that reinforces what I've talked about, increase in body fat, decrease in water content. The next slide also talks about gastrointestinal tract function. We've talked about that. It all falls under physiologic changes with aging. Here are some things that are important as we talk about accidental addicts. And I coined this phrase because people that come into treatment on prescriptions, they have a problem with the word addict because they view an addict as a criminalized younger group, and they don't see themselves as an addict because I told you one of their values is fallen authority. They don't see themselves as addict because the doctor gave it to them. Here are some doctor communication questions that's in for you that people you're working with. What drug have you prescribed? How long should I be taking this drug? Are the types of questions there? A brown bag review. So if you're working with a patient, not only do you want them to bring in their prescriptions, but you also want to have them bring in OTCs, over-the-counter medications, herbals, anything that they're taking, and ask these questions on the brown bag review. For clinicians, this is the diagnostic criteria for dependency, and I just wanted to put these side by side, the special considerations. When on the left we look at diagnostic criteria for dependency, but special consideration of this diagnostic criterion if we're working with older adult patients for the clinicians. Our story. Two things happened after my retirement. First, I quickly began to realize that I had trouble dealing with world events. Second, there was extra time to drink. I drank when I was happy, sad, depressed, and especially when I was anxious. I would even drink to sleep. Stopping on my own did not work. So I attended a behavior center for 21 weeks. While it helped for a little while, I slowly got back into my old habits. Folks, it doesn't matter when we look at liquor, beer, wine, or wine cooler. If we look at that slide, what they all have in common is they have the same amount of booze in them. And the way that we look at this, when people switch from liquor to beer to wine, it's an attempt to control. Early onset alcoholism is that case I described where people started drinking in their 20s, and throughout their lifetime, if you look at their histories, multiple treatment, maybe multiple DUIs, multiple attempts to get sober, but they never really gotten sober. Late onset is usually later in life, after 50, after some major life change, whether that's retirement, death of a spouse, geographic move, a person's drinking increases. The alcoholic brain, so we look at those brain slides. We see what a normal brain looks like with alcoholism. And we see what a brain looks like that's affected by alcohol. So again, as we begin to wrap up, it's important to remember when working with special treatment needs for older adults, it just takes longer, extended and appropriate detox is needed, slower transition. We need to assess them for speech, hearing, vision, nutrition. The issues are grief, loss. They need rest periods, and we need to treat the whole person. It's important when working with that population. It's important to have special groups that meet their needs. And with that, I'm going to open it up for questions.
And before we take your questions, we'd like to ask that you please participate in a brief survey to help us evaluate and improve our program. Please complete the following short survey questions. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in the survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity to ask questions, and your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please tell us the degree to which you agree or disagree with the following statements. Our first question, this session provided me with basic understanding of drug abuse among older adults. If you strongly agree, press star 1. If you agree, press star 2. If you disagree, press star 3. And if you strongly disagree, press star 4. We'll pause for just a moment. Question 2. This session educated me on the dangers of some prescription drugs and their possible misuse. If you strongly agree, press star 1. If you agree, press star 2. If you disagree, press star 3. And if you strongly disagree, press star 4. And for our third statement, overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. If you strongly agree, press star 1. If you agree, press star 2. If you disagree, press star 3. And if you strongly disagree, press star 4. In our fourth statement, I would recommend this program to others, star 1 if you agree and star 2 if you do not agree. And finally today, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with substance abuse issues. If I am a person with a substance abuse issue, press star 1. If you are a family member of someone with a substance abuse issue, press star 2. If you are a treatment provider with someone with a substance abuse issue, press star 3. And other, press star 4. And we thank you all for your responses. At this time, we would like to take your questions. If you do have a question, you may press star 1 at this time. And again, that is star 1 for any questions or feedback for today's call. And we'll take our first caller. Caller, please go ahead.
Hi. Yes, I enjoyed the seminar, and I have a question for you.
Okay.
How do you overcome the stigma associated with addiction, and how do you get families or the addict themselves to seek treatment?
Okay, the first part of that question is how do we get over the stigma? Well, how we do that is that we educate the patient about what a disease is, and we show them that their disease, a disease of addiction, just like the disease of diabetes or hypertension, well, what makes a disease? Well, there's a set of symptoms. There's specific diagnostic criteria for the illness, and just like diabetes, there's a predictable outcome if left untreated. And it is exactly the same with addiction. But it takes education for patients and family members, too. to really, really understand that. And we have a medical team here. We have a medical director who's, of course, a medical doctor, and we have a second doctor and a couple of advanced registered nurse practitioners and a whole skilled nursing unit. But it's really, really hard, especially when you're talking about older patients, because they will tend to see themselves, as you heard me say, as bad people, you know, because of that time and that cohort when they were raised, you know. And your second question, if you remind me?
The second question was geared towards the addict themselves. How do you reach them? How do you get the message to them that there is hope for recovery?
Well, a big part, what I do as part of my job, I was over in Naples yesterday. So far this year, I've been to Atlanta, New York, West Coast Symposium. I'll be at Cape Cod, the ASA conference in Chicago, the huge aging conference. And what I do as part of my job is I go to nursing homes or representatives come here from facilities that provide a lot of service to older adults, and I educate them as on this illness and how it affects older adults. So it's definitely outreach. Most times for my patients, adult children are involved in the research of finding a place for their parents. And we've been in business here. I've had this older adult program for more than 15 years, and it's renowned and it's known. So when, you know, our best referents are former patients, and again, the family is the patient, and the patient and the family, and the experiences they've had with this. And so, but there's never enough work in getting the word out, because as we know, the silver tsunami is here.
Well, thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
And again, for any further questions, that is star one at this time. And we don't have any other questions or comments at this time. Ms. Papa George, I'll turn things back to you for closing remarks.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Juan, for speaking today.
Oh, you're very welcome.
If you have additional questions for Mr. Harris, please contact him at the web address listed on today's PowerPoint. If you have specific questions regarding treatment or your policy, please contact the outpatient team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Drug and Alcohol Awareness Seminar on July 17th. Our topic next month will be addiction, behavior, and the brain. Thank you.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you all for joining us.